Sly in the Morning on the live line with us. John Nichols from the Capital Times, who was in Little Boy Heaven yesterday as he watched, you know, the whole reform efforts we've been making here in Wisconsin to fight back Walker kind of move to the federal scale. It must have been nice to see democracy in action.
It was quite something, man. It was, you know, there were an awful lot of people with their 14 T-shirts and all sorts of other references to the capital struggle and struggles here in Wisconsin. But you're exactly right. They took that same energy and, frankly, that same good humor to Paul Ryan's town meeting down in Kenosha. Out in front, there were women dressed in ball gowns handing out vouchers. And they said, you know, the vouchers said, tax break for me, and you get this wonderful piece of paper.
All right, and Paul Ryan's reaction to all this was, and by the way, this was in Kenosha, which is a working-class city in far southeastern Wisconsin, in some respects, very different than the rest of the state. It's probably one of the more unique communities. Here's Paul Ryan telling people what he thought of them.
It's people who don't understand what we're doing with Medicare. What I find is there's a lot of demagoguery and distortion occurring.
People don't understand.
Would the translation of that be they're stupid? I hate being out of Washington, where I've lived half my life as a congressional aide, a right-wing think tank employee, and now a congressman well on his way to qualifying for his full federal pension. It's so annoying to have to go out and, you know, listen for an hour and 15 minutes, or actually only like 40 minutes, because he took the first 20 minutes to give this ridiculous speech with like audio-visual aids. It's so annoying to have to deal with these uninformed people, right? These uninformed citizens who some folks would refer to as voters.
Well, Kenosha is interesting in that it's halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago. So some people in Kenosha get their news from Chicago, some from Milwaukee. But here's Channel 4's coverage of this last night.
Well, Courtney, Mike, in fact, we had an interview set up with Congressman Paul Ryan at the end of his appearance here at Gateway Technical College in Kenosha. But that was scrapped over a security concern. Congressman Ryan left here in a different car than he arrived in over concerns about protesters who were gathered outside. These are the protesters who waited for Congressman Paul Ryan outside Kenosha Gateway Technical College.
I have children and grandchildren, and it will directly affect them.
And keep the commitments that have been made to people, especially those who've been retiring.
Inside a capacity crowd for this listening session.
Do not renew the Bush tax credit for the wealthy.
This man who disagrees with Ryan gave his phone number out in front of everyone.
I'll debate these points anytime with you. Just call me. My number's 262.
At times, Ryan sounded more like a referee than a lawmaker.
If you're yelling, I just want to ask you to leave. If you're just going to scream out like that, it's just not polite to everybody. I mean, look, we got media here. Let's prove these people that Wisconsinites can be cordial with one another.
Well, I don't ever remember him being the playground police when that woman was screaming at Russ Feingold, "You better get your resume ready."
And you know, this is the best part, because I'm sitting there, like all my mom's friends were there, right? Because it's down. I grew up in Union Grove, and yeah, I used to ride my bike to Kenosha. And so, you know, my mom's friends had heard me on the radio earlier in the day saying I was going to be at it, and so they saved me a seat. So I'm sitting there next to them, and this one very, you know, sweet grandmotherly lady sitting next to me, after Ryan says, "Let's show them that Wisconsinites can be cordial to one another," she leans over and says, "I don't know, let's show them that Wisconsinites won't be lied to." I mean, that was the spirit of the crowd. There was no security threat at all. People stayed in their seats. They were fun and raucous, but they let him speak. There's no question that in this roughly hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20 minutes, he spoke way more than half the time. I mean, it was mostly
that sounds
Ryan.
Like a filibuster.
No, oh, he filibustered at the start. And in fact, it got so interesting. He was so desperate to avoid having to take too many questions that after this long thing at the start, every time somebody would ask a question, he'd go back to his audio-visual stuff and be flipping through these charts. So finally, it got to the point where the whole crowd was groaning and saying, no more charts, no more charts. And it was clear he was trying to, you know, kind of game the thing, make it look like he went into a difficult situation and really, you know, went back and forth with people. But the most fascinating thing about it was he had all these aides with microphones in the room. The room was packed. And they kept, and in fact, hundreds of people couldn't get in. That's the significant part of it. They keep choosing rooms that are too small. But these aides would keep going up to folks and looking for somebody who would say something nice about Paul Ryan or about his plan. And they finally found a guy after question after question after question from, you know, nice old ladies who would say things like, after you take away my Medicare, are you going to give up your gold-plated health care? And people who made him go through all of the congressional pension stuff he's getting and things like that. They finally find this guy who has a book by a guy named Ludwig von Mises, who's a libertarian economist from Austria, you know, and so looked like somebody straight up Ryan's alley. The only thing better would have been somebody with like an Ayn Rand book, right? And so they immediately jump on this guy, give him the microphone, right? And he stands up and he says, you know, yeah, I've got this, you know, book by this Austrian economist, and, you know, I really believe government is too big, and I've read through your plan, and I like a lot of the cuts that you propose. I'm glad that you're going, and, you know, Ryan's sort of beaming. He's like, you can see him, like, standing up a little taller, feeling a little better, right? And then the guy goes, but I just want to say something. I just retired from the military. I was 20 years in the Navy, and I cannot believe that you're trying to do budget balancing without talking about across-the-board cuts in military spending, because there is no way that Medicare or Medicaid is anywhere near as wasteful as what goes on in the Pentagon. And I want to say something else, too. You voted for these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Isn't it time for you to admit that they were useless and pointless and they're wasting our money and bring the troops home?
Well, John Nichols from the Capital Times with us in 1670 WTDY. Not only did he vote for wars, but he voted for, and we know this from Economics 101, no one disputes this, trade deficits also exacerbate the bottom line for the United States. He has voted for everyone and is going to continue to vote for everyone that will... Every projection in the world shows will make the deficit worse, but far worse for people who are still losing jobs. As a matter of fact, thousands of jobs have been lost just since Scott Walker took office, jobs that have moved overseas.
And, you know, the funny thing is, Paul Ryan didn't mention his free trade vote. That even when he was asked about it, it was sort of this hilarious thing. This guy, real, you know, kind of older guy who, you know, very much had the kind of classic Kenosha feel of a UAW, American Motors, Chrysler employee, gets up, and he at some length goes into the loss of all the jobs, the closing of the factories, and he said, you know, if you just put tariffs on these imports that are being sent here by American companies that have moved their production overseas so that they'd be forced to move the jobs back here to America, we'd have so many people making so much money, paying so much taxes, we could balance all your budgets, right? And Ryan's like, well, that's a very interesting idea. And, you know, a lot of these corporations, you know, I'm really concerned about the tax breaks they get to do. And he goes on and on. Well, you would have thought that Paul Ryan was Marcy Kaptur or, you know, some sort of Russ Feingold, somebody who had actually seen through these trade deals and opposed him. And amazingly enough, and really kind of shockingly, really, he never said, well, of course, I vote for these trade deals because I believe free trade is good for America, or ultimately it's going to work out. It was the most intellectually dishonest moment of a hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes that was thick with intellectual dishonesty.
You were on TV. You were talking to him. What was he saying to you?
Well, I know Paul, and I said to him afterwards, you know, here's this amazing event where packed room in the heart of his district, you know, you got, you know, all these constituents and virtually everybody there. I would say, you know, there were a few supporters, I'm sure, but virtually everybody there opposed in a very kind of intense session. I said, you know, did this have any impact on you? Did you hear anything here that made you rethink some of what you're doing? And he said, no, it's Kenosha. You know, he was totally, as you know, he always is. Mm-hmm. He's very dismissive and not affected at all by it. And I think that's an important thing to understand. Mm.
I see. So when people respond that way in Kenosha, it's Kenosha. But I'm guaranteeing you, if people were showing him support in, say, Maguanago, which is in his district.
Yeah.
For 30 pieces of silver, you betrayed our state. For 30 pieces of silver, you fostered all this hate. For 30 pieces of silver, you listened to the Kochs. For 30 pieces of silver, you betrayed Wisconsin folks. Scott Walker, you're a hypocrite. Your budget bill ain't worth a spit. First governor that we will fire. Scott Walker, you're a bald-faced liar.
1670 WTDY, Sly in the Morning on the live line with us, John Nichols from the Capital Times.
I'm you glad know, they rhymed hypocrite with spit. I was wondering where they were going with that one.
Isn't it sad, though? I mean, and it is clear that Scott Walker sold out the state for a few pieces of silver. But isn't it sad that Paul Ryan has been able to look like a hero all these years with a decent, honest, hardworking Americans here in southeast Wisconsin, and he sold out Wisconsin just as badly as Walker did.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I actually think a good deal more. Walker's penny ante. You know, I mean, that's sort of the tragedy of Scott Walker. Remember, David Koch didn't really call him. You know, they don't even deign to talk to Scott Walker. They just send him checks, and he does what he's asked, okay? Whereas Ryan really is a player. He's in the thick of it. He used to work with these folks at different Republican and conservative think tanks. He's been on Capitol Hill for 20 years. He's been moving their agenda for decades now. And, you know, and he's a made man. I mean, he's, you know, when they get in that back room and it's all the big guys, I mean, it's you know, thanks, Eddie Munster. We love you.
He's a made man. Yeah. I love that. Well, his plan isn't going over very well with the American people, and I can tell that they're concerned about it at Fox. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us here on 1670 WTDY. Stuart Varney was on with one of their blonde bimbos yesterday, and they're sounding very dire.
A stunning new report revealing more Americans depend on government assistance than at any other time in our nation's history. Check out these numbers. A record 18% of total personal income came from Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, unemployment benefits, and other benefits last year. Income from actual work wages. Well, that accounted for the lowest share of income since they've been measuring these numbers. Chris Dyerwald, our Fox News digital politics editor, and Stu Varney from the Fox Business Network join us now. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
You bet.
All right, Stu, I want to start with you. From an economic standpoint, how did we get to these numbers?
Okay. Partly it's the result of the recession, which crimped, actually made a lot more social payments have to go out from the government. It's also a result of the dramatic expansion of social programs from President Obama's start in 2008. But Shannon, I have to tell you that this is going to get worse. These transfer payments are going to increase because they're mostly Medicare and Social Security, and that means as more baby boomers retire and live longer, the transfer payments go up. It is not sustainable because a lot of this transferred money is in fact borrowed money. If you were to take a snapshot of the way America looks at the moment financially, you'd see that we are more and more a transfer handout-oriented society and less of a work-for-pay kind of society.
Now, looking at the deductions on my paycheck, John, I pay for my Medicare, I pay for my Social Security. We're not borrowing money to pay for Social Security.
No, and here's another kind of interesting twist for you. That remarkable statement that, you know, we're getting more, you know, we're taking, more people are relying on the government than at any time in history. That's what they said up front. And then they say that wonderful sort of qualifier, since we've been studying these things. which is, yeah, you know, well, we started studying it several weeks ago, and, you know, this is the most right now. The fact of the matter is that during the Great Depression, the reliance on federal programs in the United States was dramatically greater than it is today. And in fact, we regularly have circumstances where there is dramatic bump in reliance on federal programs because of economic hard times. That's one of the reasons you have a government. That's one of the reasons we have a civil society. If you deconstruct that, if you take it apart, what we do is go back to what Franklin Roosevelt referred to as the law of the tooth and claw, i.e., you know, really, you know, people fighting among themselves for food. And that's what Roosevelt feared. That's why there was the dramatic expansion of government programs during the Great Depression. That's why we also had dramatic expansions of, you know, all sorts of government programs during the very ugly economic downturn of the late 1950s, again, during the very tough economic downturns of the mid-70s and the early 1980s. And so, I mean, for Stuart Varney, who is, I believe, a subject of the Queen, not an American, or if he has finally gotten his American citizenship, more power to him. But the fact of the matter is, I'd much rather have somebody who knew a little bit of American history talking about our economics, because that would put it in better perspective, and then we would understand, right, that the fact is that most of the sturm and drang of this moment, most of the talk by Paul Ryan and Stuart Varney and people like that is a lie. It's a fantasy created on the basis of the fact that we do have had a significant economic downturn. We have had more need, much more need for government programs, but they're using that as a lie to try and attack those programs, to try and attack government itself with the ultimate purpose of returning us to, you know, again, that notion of the tooth and the claw, that situation where if you're rich, you're in great shape. You can live large even through a Great Depression. But if you're not rich, you're sort of left to fend for yourself in pretty ugly circumstances.
All right, they're trying to sell Paul Ryan's plan as giving the customer, giving the Medicaid Medicare recipient more choices. But in fact, what they're doing is they're transferring more of the risk and more of the cost to the patient, correct?
Correct. And the fascinating thing was the people in Kenosha really got that. It was an amazing moment where Ryan's talking about, people would say, well, these are vouchers. Ryan said, no. They're not vouchers. What we're going to do is give people a choice, and then we're going to give them some resources to, you know, pick among these different options, right? And you're like, well, that certainly sounds a little like a voucher, right? But he kept going on that you're going to have choice. But it's a choice of plans developed by private insurers. And as somebody in the crowd pointed out, these private insurance companies take 30% administrative costs and profit off the top, whereas Medicare or Medicaid do about less than 3%.
Well, I was going to say, right-wing talk show hosts like to throw the word government bureaucrat around, but isn't the truth that more insurance companies actually have more layers of bureaucracy than the government when it comes to these plans?
No, I don't know that slide. They may just steal more. You know, I mean, it's whether it's an actual bureaucrat doing it or if they just take the money. You know, but the bottom line is that of every dollar that you go, you know, run through an insurance company, 30 cents disappears, right? 30 cents doesn't go to patient care, doesn't go to take care of people. In fact, basically, a lot of that money, even beyond the 30 cents, goes to denying people care. Whereas when you put a dollar into Medicare or Medicaid, 97 cents of it, way overwhelming majority, goes to patient care, to taking care of people. It's an incredibly efficient program.
Here's another funny moment during Paul Ryan's listening session, or his lecture session. I like to call his sessions lecture sessions.
It was.
He voted to defund Planned Parenthood, which would take away health care for American women who cannot afford to pay it on their own. He also voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which according to...
That's Obamacare you're talking about.
Wow, right. Come on. Let's
not be
partisan.
All right.
Let's just close.
But I'm just trying to say, just so people know what you're talking about, the president's health care law.
Now, we're trying to be civil, so instead of calling Obamacare, I'm calling what it actually
okay.
is.
Okay.
Rick Santorum was on Fox News Sunday this past weekend, and you know what he compared Paul Ryan's plan to?
Mm-mm.
Obamacare. He said...
Well, you know what?
I mean, isn't that funny? I mean,
but you want to know something, Sly? I hate to say it. Santorum's right.
Well, that's it. And you know, the funny thing is both plans are unpopular. What if Barack Obama had just given Medicare to everyone?
Well, that's what he should have done. I mean, in fact, that's what, you know, the whole single payer movement, which is, frankly, single payer is a horribly named movement. You know, what single payer, you know? It should have been called from the start Medicare for All. I mean, we ought to have Medicare for every citizen.
So isn't the irony that Americans in large numbers still are very confused about the health care reform bill that passed under the Democrats, but their visceral reaction to Paul Ryan's plan is even more negative than how they responded to the president's health care plan?
Yeah, and in many senses, it's the same response. And I know that people, you know, like the pundits in Washington, they'll try and divide. They'll say, oh, well, there's the Tea Party movement, and now there's this liberal left-wing movement challenging the Republicans. And there's some truth to that. Obviously, there's partisan division, ideological division. But at the heart, the complaint is the same one. And it is, why are you messing with Medicare and Medicaid? Remember, a lot of people who came to those town hall meetings in 2009, the Tea Party folks, were saying, don't mess with my Medicare. Why are you messing with Medicare and Medicaid, two very well-operated, terrific programs that are just transformationally good in our society? And why are you doing so with the purpose of creating a plan that makes people buy insurance from private companies? You know, the whole legal objection to the Obama plan, and not an objection that will succeed, but the whole legal objection to Obama's healthcare plan is that it requires people to buy private insurance. And that's a good objection.
It is so ironic that Rick Santorum is using, and he supports Paul Ryan's plan, that he's using the president's healthcare bill or the Democrats' healthcare bill as a way to sell it. We'll talk about the birth certificate next with John Nichols, 1670 WTDY. The president has released this is the Hawaii 5-0 theme, has released his long-form birth certificate. The word Kenyan is on the certificate. Have you seen that?
I have, and yeah. African, too.
African and Kenyan are in there.
And in fact, he's not just the dad, Barack Hussein. Obama, one, is not just from Kenya. He's from Kenya, East Africa.
East Africa.
So you want to know what we have now confirmed?
Uh-huh.
Barack Obama is every bit as foreign as Mitt Romney.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Mitt Romney's dad was born in Mexico.
Oh, that's right.
So we have potentially a race between two sons of foreign fathers.
Yeah, but I don't think Barack Obama's ever gone up to some African Americans and asked them who let the dogs out.
That was the best thing of the last campaign. But I do like the idea that we could have this discussion about, you know, where your dad came from and what was your dad doing there. So Barack Obama's dad was born in Kenya, and he came to America to be a student. Mitt Romney's dad was born in Mexico, came back to become a CEO. Why was Mitt Romney's family in Mexico?
Was there some Mormon missionary work?
No, it wasn't. His grandparents moved to Mexico after the U.S. banned polygamy. I'm not kidding. So I just think, you know, if you want to go down this road, I'm on it. And I'm ready for the discussion.
And you do understand there's now another preacher that Fox is taking aim at, because Barack Obama went to church, and another Wallace Smith is his name.
You would think, by the way, that Fox would like somebody named Wallace.
Wallace, yeah. Wallace Smith pointed out that he didn't want his grandchild growing up in a country where he was a three-fifths of a man.
Yeah. You know, why can't they just get over that slavery thing? You know, I mean, isn't it time to put that behind us? You know, the fact of the matter is, I looked over some of the stuff that Wallace Smith has said, and, you know, he is, again, much like Reverend Wright, a incredibly learned guy who's got a lot to say. He may say so in very blunt and sometimes aggressive ways, but it's really interesting to listen to. And I have to say, there is a pattern with Barack Obama. He seems to like to go to churches that ask him to think rather than just to sit there and be quiet and, you know, fall asleep. And so I was fascinated by Wallace Smith, and I'm also fascinated by the notion that anyone would object to someone in the African-American church tradition who references the experience of African-Americans in this country. And it is an experience that includes slavery, segregation. Remember this important fact, that if you are over 50, if you're your age in the African-American community, Sly, you were born at a time when a substantial portion, arguably a majority of African-Americans, were denied the right to vote in the United States. So it's not like this is distant history.
No, it isn't distant, but I'm willing to bet that a lot of people that watch Sean Hannity aren't really able to walk in those shoes. They haven't seen the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, right?
I fear maybe a little bit of the little lacking in the history department there.
I'm guessing. John Nichols from the Capital Times, thanks for joining us. It's going to be a fun week.